Drew!
Mark, what's up?
Dude, this is our third time doing a call for this interview, because the past two times that we had this scheduled, we ended up just catching up and just being buddies and talking shit for like an hour straight. And then I was like, we don't have time to do an interview. So we pushed this back. You're in Hawaii. So I've now had you get up early three times in a row because I'm East Coast. So I'm sorry, but also thank you.
That's all. Early bird gets the worm. Third time's a charm. You know, all of those very trite phrases.
All of it's come together. Yeah. And it is all come together where you and I are going to have a fantastic conversation. So you're like an OG on that pitch. You were here like relatively earlier on. And so it's kind of cool. You've been able to see like all the different stages of that pitch, which has been dope, but you're also killing it. You've made quite a lot of money from it. You're getting big ass royalty checks every quarter, which is dope. So what I want to do first, before we talk about placements and everything like that, when we first met, I believe you were teaching, and then you've kind of moved into music full time. So I want to go through your whole story.
Sure. Yeah. When we first met, before I started doing music full time about 2 years ago, I had a 10-year career in like marketing and communications, in different industries. And so one of them though was the Department of Education here in Hawaii.
Got it. Okay, cool.
Music was always something that I kind of did. Like I gigged, I kind of just like made beats for fun, but as I listen back on what I had, you know, back then, I'm just like, wow.
Don't we all? We're just like, what the hell was I doing?
I thought that was good at one point.
Right.
But and then COVID happened, and there was kind of a perfect storm of things that happened where work, my traditional day job, was just kind of getting really crazy and a bit toxic. And at the same time, things were kind of picking up on the music side, and I was fortunate enough to have some great mentors who were really kind of encouraging me to push forward on it. And so eventually I took the leap, and it was freaking terrifying because I knew I was going to transition to trying to do music full time, you know, maybe like 3 or 4 months before I actually did it. And those 3 or 4 months, I was just like crunching numbers. Okay, how many gigs do I have to do? How much, sync income do I have to make? And it was just terrifying. And then I quit my job and I was like, oh God, doing this. I told myself, I'm going to give myself 6 months. I had a little bit saved up. All right, I'm going to check in with myself in 6 months. If I feel like this is something promising, then great. Like, let's keep going. And if not, I can always go back and I can get another job.
Absolutely.
That I hate. And about 2 months in, I was like, I love this. I don't need 6 months. Things started happening. I had more time to really develop myself as a producer, as a composer, and explore different avenues of making income with Think. And that's when I came across, that pitch.
Nice.
And, it just seemed kind of like a perfect opportunity because there was all these briefs. And I figured at a minimum, even if I don't land anything, it's an opportunity to practice focus writing and focus producing. And, so I signed up. I was like, you know what, you know, however, you know, handful of dollars it was a month, like, let's just see what this is all about. And, I did a couple tracks and, I placed in my first month and I was like, whoa, okay, cool. So then kind of the rest is history. I've kind of just continued to do that. And, that pitch has been at kind of at the foundation of a lot of things that I've done. It gave me a lot of confidence to continue to grow and to pursue opportunities both within that pitch and outside of that pitch.
So, that makes me so happy to hear, dude.
Appreciate you, man. Absolutely.
Well, you were telling me that like you were last week when we were like catching up, you're like working with some companies directly now, which like,
yeah,
that's the ultimate goal. Like ultimately we get tracks into music licensing companies. It's like, we're like the distro kid for music licensing companies. We just distribute them in there and we pay you 100%. But, what I thought was cool, and you know, the goal for anything in music is you want to work direct, right? So like, if you want to work with a label, or work, you know, on records, in labels, you want to be in with the artist camp, like themselves. Like you don't necessarily just want to be connected through the intermediary. It's always good to have your hands in as many places as possible. So you were telling me like last week, you're working directly with a few companies or something like that, like on some briefs or some
things. Yeah. So, well, I'm working directly with the agencies that, with the marketing agencies, the advertising agencies that
yes!
companies hire.
Yes. Yeah, hell yeah,
that's
dude.
That's been exciting. I a lot of life in general is just luck. And I was very fortunate to have a friend of mine, you know, who does videography, does a lot of the directing and art direction for these ad spots. And so, he brought me in. So one of them was Levi's. One of them was Steve Madden. Recently did one for Puma as well.
Hell yeah, dude.
So it's been, it's been kind of a trip to even like say those names out loud as companies that I have music with.
When you first get like, so you had a buddy who was in this, like what was your initial pitch to him of like, yes, I can do this sort of thing.
Well, we were at a wedding and we were just kind of talking and we hadn't seen each other in a while. It's like, what are you doing these days? And, he was like, well, I'm just doing a lot of videography work and, doing this with this brand and that brand. I was like, oh, dang, like, it's like super legit. Like I'm doing music for, for sync, for TV, ads, film. And then kind of the conversation just started. And my whole thing was like, listen, like, I just want a shot. Like, I'll make you something.
Right.
Like with no guarantees of anything.
No pressure. Just like, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. And
that's the best way to do it.
For sure. For sure. And lucky enough, it resonated with him. It resonated with the company. And so we've been able to kind of move forward. Monty, if you're listening, forever grateful. Thank you, man.
That's awesome. Well, I want to bring it back again because, I want to unpack a lot of this because, a lot of people in music, or who are pursuing music, they have to make that switch where they're just like, all right, I'm going to do this full time. Right. I never actually made the switch. I've always been in music full time. That's just always been my job. Thug Life chose me, dude. So like, I've never had a 9-to-5. I never had to have that moment where like,
lucky
what's
you.
The rest of my life going to look like, I was teaching like music one-on-one to students. Like I was like teaching hourly, but that's the only like, not like, I guess, dream gig that I've been doing. So like I had to kind of make that transition, but you had to make that transition. So, it sounds like you always wanted to do music full time. Now you were producing a bunch. What was, kind of the year leading up to you making that switch? How is everything looking? And like, did you have kind of like certain moments where you're like, I really got to go for it. Like, this is, you know what I'm saying? Like, and any anxieties that kind of led into that? Cause I feel like a lot of people deal with that where they think that this isn't possible, but it absolutely is. Like there's a shitload of money in music,
I mean, talk to me 3 years ago and I wouldn't have thought it was possible.
I just
did not ever think that it was a realistic possibility that I could be doing music for a living. I just had this conversation with a friend yesterday, sitting there, like having a nice long lunch on a weekday, because I didn't have to worry about getting back to an office or anything like that. And I was just kind of sitting there. I'm like, wow, like this is crazy. Like it's actually kind of happened. And I'll say that the first, I had this kind of light bulb moment. There is this incredible music conference called the Hawaii Songwriter Festival. It's called a festival, but it's more of a conference. There's a lot of, really amazing, both songwriters there, like legit, like Grammy winning songwriters, the people that wrote the songs for the biggest hits, And then there's another group of people that are like music supervisors and, owners of agencies. I know we had talked about, Marmoset and other agencies like that.
Yeah.
And I went there and I didn't know what sync was. And this was in 2019, right before the pandemic happened. And I went there and, I had been in bands and I had performed. It just never, being like a quote unquote artist didn't necessarily seem like the path that I wanted to take.
And that's good that you had that realization early on, because a lot of people will pursue that for 10 years because they think that's what they're supposed to want and they actually didn't want.
Right. Totally. And I thought that was maybe the only path. And so I went to this conference and I learned about sync and I was like, what? Like, that's a thing? I can just make music and make money? Like, that is crazy. So from that point on, that was 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago. And I was like, okay, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. How do I get?
And it kind of, you know, fit your lifestyle of how you wanted to approach all of this. Because also touring as an artist out of Hawaii is... that's a logistical nightmare. That's very expensive just to get your second date, you know? Yeah.
No, 100%.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Also real quick, you're frozen in a, you know, you look wonderful.
But yeah, it'll be fine. Like it usually just ends up, that's just like how all these go. Just talk to my beautiful voice. It's fine. Nice. Like you've been frozen already a couple times. This is just the internet. I love it, dude. Love it. All good. Don't worry about it.
So yeah. So after that, I found, you know, actually, this is kind of funny. I don't think I've ever told you this, but I took a course with Andrew Gulla.
Oh, Andrew! I love Andrew.
So I got back from that music conference, and I was like, I need to do this, but I don't know anything about it other than what I just heard. How do I, like, even get my foot in the door? Like, all I have and know how to do is this, like, kind of singer songer stuff. And so I, like, did some Google searching and, like, I think I actually just like was just searching for podcasts. I was just consuming every little bit of information that I could possibly find on the subject. And I came across Andrew's podcast. And then, you know, within that podcast, he talked about his course. And so I took his course. And that kind of got the ball rolling. And actually, you know what? Maybe that's how I found out about that pitch. I don't know.
Yeah, because Andrew did actually a course that like is included free with that pitch. And that.
I watched that.
Yeah, it's like this 7-day songwriting. It's like it's a boot camp to learn how to write for sync. So
yeah, I loved it. I loved it. That was great.
Andrew's the man. I got to shoot him a text. He's great.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't talked to him in a minute, but he was so supportive early on. He's awesome. He's awesome.
He's a good dude.
From that point on, I just kind of continued to hone my craft. Just a lot of hours in the lab / YouTube, where I learned many things. And it was about getting reps in. And, you know, I continue to just explore different genres. And that's kind of where that pitch, another appeal of that pitch is like, well, you have an excuse to write in all these different genres and try your hand at it.
Yeah, do whatever the hell you want. Just try it out.
Yeah, and you learn what you like, and you learn what you don't like, and you learn what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, and you know what you need to develop, or the genres that you're just like, that's just not going to be a part of my. That's fine.
Right.
And that's kind of been the path.
So basically, all you're telling me is you decided you wanted to do sync. You studied the shit out of it, and then you just went out and made a shitload of music, and here you are doing music full time. That's literally how it works.
Yeah.
People don't realize, like, at the end of the day, like, what is the beauty of music licensing is that it's just building a catalog of music and figuring out a way to monetize all of that music in different places. One of those is film. One of those can be streaming. There's so many different ways, I keep saying this lately, but I'm going to keep talking about it, is like every single song is a piece of real estate. It's up to you if you want to rent it out, if you want to sell it. If one of the tracks does really well, the rest of the neighborhood's property value goes up. You know, that pitch is really just like a property management company. You know, you upload all of your houses and then we put it in different places that makes you money. And because it's such a crazy growing market, it's, you know, anything in music is going to be hard. Like there's no easy way to approach it. Like it's all a lot of work, but like there's more money in music than there ever has been in the history of the industry. And this corner of the industry, music licensing, is the fastest growing corner of it, you know? So that's crazy, man. So you began writing and producing in a bunch of different genres. You kind of realized that certain things were fitting, certain things weren't. At this point, were you full time, or were you at the point where you were just like really spread thin, where, you know, you were working during the day and then you were producing?
Right. I was spread thin. And, you know,
what was your fuck it moment?
Oh, my fuck it moment. That's a good question. Probably just like when my day job just became so, I kind of want to be careful with what I say, but,
that's, we can talk shit and not mention names. That's fine. That's how I go about it, bro.
Yeah, that's true. It just got so crazy and toxic that I was like, there is no fucking way I can continue to do this.
Yeah.
And so I started looking for other jobs, and it felt like I was getting close, but then it wasn't happening. And I just kind of took that as a sign that I'm like, okay, well, like, and this is how out of my mind, like, the idea of doing music was just like, it didn't even really occur to me in my brain that like that was a thing that was going to, that was a possibility. And then I was like, it was just kind of just like, oh, wait, why don't you just try it?
Yeah.
You know, I could pick up a few more gigs. I have some money saved up. And like, just give it a go. Why not? And, you know, you can always go back to this day job life thing.
People surprise the shit out of themselves when they just like throw themselves in the lion's den and just see what they're made of. Like people don't realize this still, but like that pitch is not like this massive, huge company with like investors and all this bullshit. It's like me, some homies that I hire here and there to like help with some stuff, and like hundreds of thousands of automations that happen every single month. And then mentors that I have that are like vastly ahead of me in the industry, you know? But I just started out as a drummer. And then when I felt like I kind of achieved what I wanted to achieve as a drummer, I was like, all right, I'm gonna go for production. Like, let's work on producing. Like, let's see what I can do. And then it's just like a puzzle that you're figuring out. It's like, all right, what systems? That's like, how do I want to approach this, you know?
Yes, and like, so accurate.
Yeah. And it's just like you being in Hawaii and realizing like, I don't want to be a touring artist. Okay. But I want to do music full time. So what avenues can I, you know, I'll be the first to tell you, my dream is not to have a track under a Netflix movie. That's not like my dream. I didn't grow up wanting to like have my, be like a massive composer and everyone in Netflix and Hulu knowing my name. That like, that was just never a thing. I just want to be able to hang out with my friends in my studio, travel whenever I want, play with whoever I want, work on the records I love, and just have passive income from royalties and upfront cash from deals. Like that's it. So it's like you design the life that you want, and how can I craft my day to day to make sure that it supports that life that I want? Like your business should just support the life that you want. You shouldn't design your life around how the business should look. That's in music. That's like in everything. You know, so what was cool is like you realizing really early on, like, okay, I don't want to have this 9-to-5. Like, I'm not into it. I know there's money out there. Logically, it is out there. Emotionally, I'm not feeling it, but like, I know it's there. Like, why can everyone else do this? And I feel like I can't. No, of course I, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're like, all right, I want to be able to work in a studio. Do you surf?
Absolutely.
All right, cool. I'm making a Hawaii stereotype. Yeah, there you go. I'm making a Hawaii stereotype, and it was fucking right. All right, so but he wants to surf, you know, like you want to, I don't know, pokeballs. Anyways, but like, I'll just throw all of them, bro. But you know, this is what you want your day to day to look like, and how can I put myself in a position where what I'm passionate about supports the life that I want, and you've made it. Like, this is what making it to me looks like, is life design. You designed the life that you want and you're living it, which is amazing. So, what's really cool. So you land very regularly through that pitch. You just got placements this past week, I think. And we'll listen to another one that you landed recently. you know, just like on a transparent note, just for everybody, because I think what's very important regarding licensing and kind of this new era of music licensing, because not everything is traditional sync anymore, right? It's just using your music for a place that happens to use video and you make money from it, right? What, you know, just in general stuff, like what do these gigs look like payout wise? And like, what are you making, you know, on like from quarterly statements sometimes? Like, obviously you have a bunch of other upfront stuff going on, but like something with that pitch is a lot of companies want music exclusively and people get nervous about that. But like, that doesn't mean there aren't royalties. They just need to be able to sign off stating that they can license it out. But we always give royalties and they're from these companies and there's a lot of it out there. So yeah, what, you know, whatever you're happy to share or not share or whatever, but, yeah, man, I just want people to know that this shit is real.
it's very real. And we were talking a little bit before we started recording. And I told you one of my main concerns with that pitch was like, well, like, okay, yeah, we're going to get this upfront fee, you know, which is great. And at the time when I started, I was like, well, that's more money than I've ever made in Sync anyway, which was nothing. Like, it was still an upfront fee. And I was like, that's dope. Like, that's really cool. Because I can't sell any CDs anymore, yada, yada, yada.
Sure.
But my concern was, okay, but like, is that it?
Yeah,
is that
absolutely.
Song just going to be like, okay, I got like a few a few hundred bucks and like, that's it. And I'll never see it again. And so that was my concern. I just said, fuck it anyway. And just submitted because I had been in that pitch Facebook group, Producer Land. And there's other people that were, you know, have been generous enough to share their statements and, you know, talk about the royalties that they had been receiving. And I was like, okay, all right, I think this seems legit. But still, in my neurotic brain, I was like, I don't know if that's...
Dude, you should be, because there's a lot of bullshit in our industry. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I wanted to talk tangibles. It's like...
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so I actually was using this service. I use this service called TuneSat, which kind of monitors the airwaves around the world. And, you know, you throw your music, your cues in there, and anytime it gets used, it'll pop up. And so that first placement, you know, that first month that I was with that pitch, I just popped it in there because I was like, okay, let's see what happens. And within a couple months, like, it started popping up, like, internationally and like Germany and like I don't even like just Europe. And it started popping up quite a bit, and then I had another song, and that song started getting used in Europe, and then it got picked up for a national ad campaign here in the States. And eventually, once those quarterly statements started coming in, you know, it was just for like a couple of that pitch cues, it was like a couple grand a quarter, and I was like, oh, okay, like this is like legit, like this is not like this is not the sense that I was seeing on my past statement.
You know, I don't know where like
HQs alone was thousands of dollars. So I was like, okay,
yeah. And cool. You know, we pay the, you know, included with everyone's membership fees. I'm not like good at communicating all this shit because I'm just like so busy working, but like, you know, part of everyone's membership fees goes to companies administering royalties around the world. Mm-hmm. So anything you land in any of these companies, we're administering royalty payouts globally in every single territory, and it gets paid to you 100%. Sometimes it gets paid directly through that pitch. And then depending on like international copyright and like legally what is allowed like to be paid through that pitch, sometimes it just shows up directly in your BMI. But mm-hmm. that's because mm-hmm. we're administering. So, right. You know, at this point, it's been like millions of dollars. Which is just dope because it's still so early on. And, you know, this isn't even including content ID statements, which are beginning to grow and grow and grow. So yeah, there's that. That's the thing, is like every single song is an asset. So something that you probably don't even know, Drew, that I wanted to talk to you about is once you start showing how much is like made per quarter and through your royalty statements. So let's say next year or something, through royalty statements, you bring in just passively through BMI or whatever. Mm-hmm. Let's say it's like, I don't know, 50 grand or something like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, if you do that and it's showing as consistent, I could take that to investment funds and brokers that I know. And likely if you wanted to, you don't have to, but right now, like, just think of it. You're renting out your houses, right? Mm-hmm. I could take that, contact a broker or whomever, you know, I'm already tight with that does good work. And if you wanted to sell your neighborhood, that is going between like an 8 and 10 to sometimes even 20 multiple right now. But I'd say a safe one is a 10 multiple. So if it was like, let's say 50K,
right,
there's no reason why you wouldn't get an offer for like 500 grand.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's
dude. Crazy. And guess who's buying it?
Hmm.
Dude, so Olay Publishing. They were, I think, the fourth largest publishing company in the world before they got acquired by BMG.
Okay.
They were entirely funded. Okay. And I'm talking like the most massive records where artists were signed to this, right? Mm-hmm. They were just buying up music. They were entirely funded by the Canadian Teachers Pension Fund.
Whoa. Okay.
one of my best friends, just a mentor of mine, he used to be the president of Amalgam Publishing based out of the Netherlands. Okay. And he got a BMI award for working with Bruno Mars, Daft Punk, on, you know, Get Lucky. He got an award for that. Like, that's where he's at. It's so cool. Wow. Anyways, Amalgam Publishing, which was a massive publishing company before they got acquired, they were entirely funded by, I think it was like the Dutch Transportation Retirement Fund or something like that.
That's so interesting.
Because you have to think about it. So this is why. It used to be rare, okay, where it's like, you know, where music was an asset class. Okay. But what is the huge, like crazy shift that has gone on in the music industry right now and why there's seemingly more money than ever? Why Dua Lipa sold her catalog for between $10 and $100 million. And she's like a relatively newer artist.
Right.
The reason being is because in 2020, everyone stopped leasing office space. All of these companies started leaving commercial real estate. And you may not know this. Our parents may not even know this. Every single boomer, their, you know, Roth IRA, their, what's the thing that you give? Like if you have a 9-to-5, you like give a little bit.
401k.
401k. Yeah. All of these investment classes, part of it or all of it is a lot of times tied up in commercial real estate.
Right.
And because 2020 happens, and everyone realized we could work from home, suddenly building big office, you know, skyscrapers wasn't as safe of an investment. So then all of these financial institutions all around the world were like, we have money and we don't know where we can store it safely because these skyscrapers are not renting out anymore.
Right.
You know,
so let's invest land in publishing then, essentially? Is that
what they did? Is they were like, where can we store our money that's going to give us consistent return?
That and is so crazy.
So check this out. So back in the 80s, I believe it was like early 80s, David Bowie was funding his new record and he was not with his label anymore. And he needed money for, various things, production costs, touring, everything. Right. And, you know, there was no label backing. So he's like, how are we going to do this? And he was talking to his banker and he was like, well, you sell records, right? It's pretty consistent. And he was like, yeah. And he's like, well, I see your record as an asset because you're going to sell this and that's going to provide returns. So we're going to give Bowie bonds out. You can look this up, go to Wikipedia, write in Bowie bonds.
Bowie bonds.
He invented music as an asset class. And so there's been a subculture for the past like 30 or 40 years of basically looking at music publishing, royalties, masters, everything as an asset class. And that's been like a subculture that I've like, I'm like the little kid in it, which is kind of cool. Like everybody I talk to in the end, like I'm good fan, dude, I know on Nashville, Andrew, he, you know, brokered all of Backstreet Boys publishing. And like, you know, I'm friends with like these guys now. It's cool. Cause I'm like the young pup, which
right,
is fun.
Right.
But it was this small subculture for a while. And because 2020 happened, it just sped it by like 10, 15 years of what otherwise would have happened. So all of these bankers, everyone, they're looking at royalties. They're looking at streams on Spotify and they're like, wait a second. I know how much this is making. I can see the streams.
Right.
I know how much it pays out.
That's
I can
wild.
Look at the history. Wait a second. This is an investment opportunity. So that's why it's crazy. And so I'm like really going into the weeds, but this is just what I heard out of.
This is very interesting.
So I just consider this a personal conversation at this point. It happened where we happen to be recording it because we need content out of it, baby.
Yeah.
But, this is just what I nerd out about.
Mm-hmm.
Downtown Music realized that they had a massive opportunity because they were sitting on so much publishing and so much rights, they just sold all of it to Concord for like $400 million or something crazy. I think it was $400 million. And now they're just like going into music tech. So they got CD Baby, they got Fuga, like a bunch of these other tech companies. But there's so much money in publishing and everyone's investing in it. So when I say that your songs are an asset class, they truly are. What you are doing by getting these quarterly checks, right? Because there's people who listen to this who are on the investment side of the music industry. And you just saying that you're getting these quarterly checks, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody reaches out to you and says, hey, man, would you like to have a conversation about potentially, you know, whatever, like selling your rights to these or whatever? And that's interesting. And you can decide, huh?
I never thought about that. That was,
yeah.
I mean, I remember seeing all these massive numbers coming out for like people getting their publishing bought out, but I didn't really understand why.
So
yeah,
the reason why I keep talking about Dua Lipa. Yeah. So for years, you know, we were, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers sold for $300 million. Personally, I think that was oversold. I don't know who the fuck's going to be listening to Suck My Kiss 20 years from now, whatever, you know, there's a lot of other catalogs that are being sold that are like well worth it. And we still haven't gotten into like the Blink 182 or Green Day stuff as of this date. But my buddy manages Avril Lavigne's publishing catalog, and they've had quite a few people reach out now. So there's all like these legacy kind of artists that we've been used to. And then we got some from like the early 2000s, right? Like the Blink 182 and Green Day are starting to get approached. But the reason why Dua Lipa is such a big deal is because for companies to invest in asset classes, they want to see a long period of a return. So like, if a company's going to buy a skyscraper, they want to know that all these places are getting rented out and they're going to upfront money. And after 10 or 20 years or whatever, it's going to be paid back because they know people are going to rent it still. And then it's all profit. The reason why it's so crazy with Dua Lipa is she's not 20 or 30 years, you know, into her career. She's only 10 years into her career. Right. So that just set a precedent in the finance world that it's worth investing in a music catalog that's really less than 10 years old.
Right. That opens up a lot of doors for a lot of other people, doesn't it?
Yes. And what's the crazy thing about this, and I can't yell it, you know, as much as I want to, like what's crazy about all of this is because there's just a huge vortex going on of money because that just happened. At the same time, the creator economy has opened up where now YouTubers are music supervisors, in effect. They're directors. So there's more money than ever. Content ID from YouTube is paying out more than ever. They paid out $6 billion this year. Last year was 1.2. And then Facebook and Instagram, their copyright infrastructure is finally being updated. They just, at this time, negotiated with every major label. And now they're working on something with independent music. So royalties will start really accumulating there. I don't have too much hope for TikTok, to be honest with you, but... There will be something. I don't think it's going to be great, but there'll be something. But all these countries are beginning to realize that this is TV from the 80s and it needs to be, the royalties need to be the same. So
that's really encouraging to hear because, you know, I've had my music in TV shows as well. And so like you see your statements and like when they're on network television, typically those rates are a lot higher than when it moves to Hulu after or something like that. Right.
Yep.
And And so that's nice to hear that that infrastructure or that system is getting updated to reflect that.
That's the thing is it the Music Modernization Act had a lot to do with it. And there's a lot more things that are beginning to happen. But what's even crazier about this too, is like you're in Hawaii and I'm in North Carolina and we're having this call, you know, Netflix just built this past year. It's like a massive studio complex in, I want to say, I forgot where in Spain. It's either Valencia or Barcelona. I forgot which, but you know, their entire idea or an idea that they have is instead of there being Brad Pitts and like the Angelina Jolies and the Jennifer Anistons, where they're all in Hollywood, they're all American.
Right.
Their bet is there's all of these smaller countries or big countries in themselves that like feel like they're not represented. And so we're going to film the same movie and have their local celebrities.
That's interesting.
Because they have geo data. which AMC and Regal never had. So there's this huge vortex of globalization going on in the music industry. On top of that, the creator economy is exploding. And on top of that, copyright is being updated across all countries and all mediums that it shows up. So with all of this, like, there's a shitload of money coming your way, dude. So
nice to hear. That is indeed nice to hear. For all of us that are here making music for these creators. That's super cool, man.
Super funny. What's funny is, like, if you look at sync licensing in the 80s or whatever, it's like stuff at its core is the same, but because the medium is so different, like, nobody, for some reason, they just can't equate this to like a TV. For some reason, it's just the screen's smaller, but it's the same thing happening.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, no, totally. That makes
you're looking at a screen for an hour straight. You know?
Right.
So, anyways, yeah, dude. Huh. Hit me up a year from now. Like, show me those royalty statements, and
I know, right?
If you want, I'll broker a deal for you, bro.
Okay, let's do it. I gotta get to work then.
Hell yeah, dude. Well, listen, you just landed something recently. You've landed a bunch of stuff recently. But we're just gonna pick one at random that you sent through. You know.
Do it.
I don't even know how many placements you've had at this point, but there's a lot.
There's some members that every month it's like they have an insane amount of placements. So I'm like, wow.
Yeah, they're cool. Yeah, but it's, you know, it's like they're just making music all day, you know. It's a good crew. Everyone's very supportive, and like, indeed, if you've landed a shitload, what I really like is the people who have landed a shitload know that it's in their best interest for the people who haven't landed as much or any to start landing, because it's like all ships rise with the tide,
something like that.
Anyways, yeah. Cool. Well, we're going to listen to this track. It's a world track. And actually I think one of the first, I might be mistaken, but I feel like one of the first placements you landed was a world track. We actually needed Hawaiian music.
Yes.
I specifically remember you sent in Hawaiian music. I was like, my motherfucking man.
Yeah. And that's the one, that's probably my that pitch track that's got used the most. It gets used all the time. So, yeah.
I mean, honestly, dude, like, you could literally have an entire artist moniker that just makes Hawaiian music and just brand that and market that specifically. Right. And I bet you it would make you some quiche, brah. Anyways, well, let's listen to this track. It's Tell Dem with a D, D-E-M, Tell Dem. We're very hip here. And we're going to listen to this. And then I'll ask you a couple of questions. And then we'll wrap up, brah.
Sounds good.
All right, here we go. That was dope. Very, as a drummer, myself, very authentic kind of reggae drumming. That was fucking sick. How was it making this? How did you approach it?
Yeah,
dude.
So the brief came through. It was kind of just for any range of world music, and one of the subgenres was, I believe, like, forget how it was labeled, but like Afrobeat or Afrofunk or something like that. And, I love Fela Kuti, if you probably could
tell. Oh yeah, right on. Sick.
I was like, oh, like that sounds cool. Like I've never seen that kind of come through before. I would love to make a track like that, because I used to listen to the shit out of Fela Kuti and Femi Kuti and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I really wasn't too sure how to approach making it at first. I mean, I knew I could play the bass and the guitar and the keys, and I play drums, but I don't have a drum setup. And so a lot of it is samples. So a lot of the drums are samples, you know, that I've kind of chopped just to fit a little bit better.
Yeah, that's all it is. When you can use samples, as long as you manipulate it so it's not like a drag and drop from the original place.
For sure. Exactly. So I kind of had that, you know, as the foundation, the percussion, because I mean, the percussion is the most important part of it. It drives it. And then the horns were samples too, that I popped into Melodyne and I reworked the melodies, because Melodyne is just freaking crazy like that. And you can't even really tell that, you know, the melody has been minted. So,
right.
And then the rest is my live playing, keys, guitar, bass, and the percussion. So
that's awesome, dude.
So yeah, that's kind of that. And then sounds the rest is kind of just great. Up to the arrangement, you know, of it all. Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate that.
Man, awesome. I love it. I'm so happy. This sounded great.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, so two things I ask before we wrap up any interview here on the That Pitch podcast with Mark Eckert. fuck my life. how did I end up here? But two things that I just like think helps out the crew, helps out everybody.
Sure.
Is for anybody pursuing music as a career, what advice would you give them? And then secondly, where can people find you online if there's companies that directly want to work with you, or people who just want to contact you in general, where should they go?
All right. Well, all right, let's start with the advice part, because I've kind of been thinking about that a bit lately. You know, I've had several people even just recently kind of ask, like, okay, like what do I need to do? And I think there's in this journey, there is so much rejection, and there's so many moments of self-doubt, so many moments where you're just like, am I doing the right thing? I don't know. And that is where two things come into play, community and mentorship. And That Pitch honestly provides both.
I didn't even tell him to say this.
No, you did it. You did it. But it's true. And then obviously there's a lot of great resources outside of That Pitch as well. But I mean, since we're on a That Pitch podcast,
come on,
it's.
I'll pay you later.
It's appropriate. I mean, it is so important to be able to like have a gut check. Be like, hey man, like, is this stuck? And usually that's not quite the case, or sometimes it is. Sometimes it does suck.
Yeah,
and,
but if it is, I'll be like, yeah, dude, this sucks shit. Like, it's not gonna happen.
But it gives you direction, and it's so helpful to have people that are on the journey alongside you, and people that are ahead of you and can kind of give you direction. And I've had so many like really incredible mentors that, you know, have been in this game a lot longer than I have and are highly successful. And it was their kind of guidance and their support and their encouragement that really gave me the confidence to kind of push forward.
You need mentors. Yeah. I can't stress that. I've always had mentors.
Yeah. And I hear you talking about that a lot, you know, in your podcast or anytime we just have a conversation, you know, I'm always hearing about the mentors that you have. And like, that's a common thread amongst successful people, is that they have people that know way fucking more than them and will guide them forward. And give them a roadmap.
Yeah. And what's interesting about like, I know this is your time, but I just want to cut in regarding mentors.
No, let's hear it. I want to hear it. Yeah.
People are often like, where do I find a mentor? You know? Mm-hmm. And it that's just like such a weird thing. Cause there's like, I don't have like official, like people don't call me their mentee. Right. It's just people that I respect the living shit out of that I will gladly buy their meal. yep. buy them a drink, get yep. them coffee, do whatever the hell, because I just think they're so fucking cool. And sometimes when I'm complaining about something, I'm like, ah, God, this sucks. What do I do? They're like, yeah. well, listen, bud, you should do it this way. And it's like, for me, like real mentorship doesn't necessarily, like, I don't know. I've never had like a mentor with a vested interest. They just genuinely mm-hmm. give a shit. Now, that being said, sometimes you really have to like prove to them that you're on the same playing field. And that's, right. I think ultimately the people who decide to invest in you, you need to prove to them that, you know, if they give you advice and you don't go with it and you don't fucking take it, or like you take them for granted, like it's about yeah. respect. Like they're ahead yeah. of you for a reason. Nobody yeah. was given this. Nobody in the industry was given it. And if they are, yeah, if they are given it, then they like shoot right back down, you know?
Yeah, no, it's so true. It's so true.
Yeah. So this isn't an industry where you can like, what is it? Like stand on like a paper house or something. Right. I don't know.
Something like that.
I'm like yeah. not good with the yeah. sayings anyways, but, but yeah, man, good that you have like people who genuinely give a shit about you, and you clearly genuinely give a shit about as well.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. It's, yeah, that's, I guess that's what, and then one other thing is
sure.
just, you got to put the time in.
Yeah. It's just hours.
It's hours and it's reps and, yep. You know, it's even when you're making a track that is never going to see the light of day, it's still practice and you're still learning something.
Yeah.
You
know?
Yeah. You learn more to do another phrase that I might butcher. You learn more from your failures than successes or whatever, something like that.
That works for me. Gets the point across. So yeah, no, yeah, people don't want to. Yeah. Like I'd say also it's like the quality of the hour too. I think there gets yes. to a point where, you know, I think some people would disagree with me on this, and that's fine. But like your music has to be at 80 to maybe 90%. And that last 10 to 20% is subjective in my mm-hmm. view. It can change mm-hmm. every couple of years, mm-hmm. Depending on like what the trends are saying is good or bad.
Sure.
So
sure.
Yeah. It needs to be of commercial quality. You do need to know like if this can stand on its own and just like basic rules regarding like production and songwriting or what have you. But you know, after that, you just need to network and not be an asshole and just like be a nice person,
yeah.
you know, if you do those two things, you'll end up really well. Cause if you just keep working in that direction that you're only working on music all day and you're not trying to network and you're not like studying business books or just like looking up to people, you know, getting meetings with people.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. If you're just alone in your room all day making music, that might not help as much as it yeah. would meeting people. But vice versa, if you only meet people and you don't have a product, you're not going to get hired.
It's got to be a balance. Absolutely got to yeah. be a balance. Yeah.
So cool, man. And then where can people find you online?
Yeah. I'm on Instagram at Drew Henme. And then website, drewhenmemusic.com. Yeah, just definitely if anyone has any questions, feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to share any insights that I might be able to share. So,
my motherfucking man. All right, Drew Henme, thank you so much.
Mark, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Chiming in all the way from Hawaii.
Yes, sir.
Dude.
Coming in. Over
my
the,
pleasure.
Over the way.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, I'm the luckiest dude here, man. I have no idea how the fuck I ended up here, but I'm working really hard and it's fun.
For all of us.
Yeah, man.
We appreciate
it. Dude, I'm not going to lie. Like during COVID, just like when everything, like, you know, the world was upside down, just being able to like pay out 20 or 30 or 40 grand a month to people, just like, hey guys, I got money. And it's just like, people are like, I can buy wine for myself, or like, you know, rent's cool. Like that was honestly the most fulfilling time of my life. Obviously I'm upset of why that had to happen, but like, that was really, I'm never going to forget that. This is the most fulfilling job I could ever have. So, anyways, appreciate you, bro. Thanks for being here through the time. And yeah, man, cool.